Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Got it caught! Touchdown! Oh, my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week, post-draft edition. Brian Sexton, along with the senior writer of Jaguars.com, John Osher. Joe is not here this evening. Scott Kushner, who's our game day engineer, is taking his place. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Nice to have you. This is the old radio line. John Dineen sitting in as well. And we're here for the next hour to talk about the Jaguars draft, about the division, football in general. We probably should touch on labor just briefly because we're expecting a ruling tomorrow.
Sure.
And, well, let's get that one out of the gate. Well, first of all, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, outside the calling area, 800-355-6351. And if you've got a thought and you want to get it on the air and you do the Twitter thing, at Jags Voice, and got it set up in front of me right here, so we'll get your thoughts on the air. Tomorrow, John, the NFL expects a ruling from a three-judge panel from that Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis on whether or not their temporary injunction is allowed. In other words, what they're saying is they can keep the lockout going
right
as they wait for the June 3rd date, which is the hearing in front of the entire appellate court, and then some date into the future beyond that, a ruling on whether the Jaguars, not Jaguars, the NFL can lock out the players or not. It gets confusing with all the different ways, but tomorrow it's pretty much a foregone conclusion, isn't it? They're going to uphold the players or the owner's injunction, because they don't probably want to send him back in for a month and then throw him back out after a month.
That's the overriding thought, and there's the thought of they had a lot of information when they granted the stay, and or when they made their ruling, when they made their last ruling, they had much the same information as this ruling would be based on.
Okay,
so it would be I don't say unusual, but I guess the odds are that you would stay with what was ruled and continue forth until the next date, and the next date, and then the next date.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the bottom line is at some point, both sides, I mean, and this is my belief, both sides are going to get hurt financially enough that they say, we've got to get something done. And there's sort of two parallel stories here, the courts, and then the reality, these guys have to get back to the bargaining table. And it's starting to look like that the pace is going to be that it's the bargaining table, which is what Wayne has said all along, that's going to force it. And at some point, they're going to get hurt financially on a personal level by not playing football. They'll get back to it, and they'll figure out a way to get this thing done.
Well, you hope so. I had a conversation yesterday with someone who is involved, and the conversation went along these lines. If, say that they do the hearing on the 3rd, and there is a ruling on the 15th. If the owners were to win and their lockout was granted as legal, then what I was told is this thing's going into August, because the owners will dig in, emboldened by the court ruling, and try to force the players back to the table. And of course, as you said, it won't be until someone says, "Hey, we need the money."
And I don't know every player in the league. I just see it as, it's all fine until the paychecks aren't coming in.
Correct.
And then wifey gets mad.
And
I mean, and that's a very simplistic way of saying it, but then all
true.
Of a sudden,
it's a lifestyle issue.
I know when my bank account starts hurting, I start making different decisions.
Right.
And I have a different bank account than these guys, but they have more expenses than I do. At some point when those checks aren't coming in, that's when you start looking at your labor leaders and saying, I'm tired of talking about ideals. I want to get paid.
Now, the flip side of that is that if the players win, then the league season would begin, the league year.
Mm-hmm.
Free agency would, of course, be expedited, and they would go back to working under, I would presume, the rules that they had in 2010.
That's the best guess.
And because there's a six-year window on free agency from 2010, they expect to get sued with the antitrust again.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd go forward, and we'd see free agency. We'd see some quickened off-season program,
right.
And then we'd see, football in August because people want to get paid.
I think it would be, and this is what I've sort of been told and deduced, it would be much like it was in the late 80s and early 90s. They played with labor issues going on in court. They went ahead and played the seasons, and occasionally the fans saw a piece on the NFL Today or an ESPN that it was going on, but you really didn't see much effect on the field as a fan. And there were major court issues that eventually led to free agency and eventually led to the system that we have today, but the fan really didn't know about it. For the fan, that's the ideal. For the players and owners, it's not ideal because one of those sides wants a resolution. One of them wants to win this. So they really don't want an extended court thing. It's not great for the league, but you know, well, we'll see how it plays out.
And remember now, the Jaguars are also looking for some certain things, and but they're looking for a deal that makes it more viable for smaller markets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, in a sense, you know, for the long-term health of pro football in Jacksonville, the short-term may have to suffer.
Correct. Absolutely. And you know, I know they want to get a deal done that's better for that. I mean, that's the reason they're at this thing, and that's the reason, you know, fans get very upset with the ownership and they get very upset with the players. But I know from the owner's perspective, especially from an owner like Wayne, is they're not trying to be greedy. They're trying to get something that makes this work.
Right.
And fans don't want to hear this because there's billions of dollars involved and the eyes glaze over when you start talking billions of dollars and everything looks like greed. And that's fine. That's what it should look like to fans. But the reality is they're really trying to figure out a way to, you know, to make it work in these non-big markets, smaller markets.
Now, do you suppose that the television ratings from last Thursday, and I had a long-running Twitter conversation with a group of fans today, do you suppose that the television ratings, which were off about 25% from a year ago when they mm-hmm. moved the primetime experiment for the draft, do you suppose that has any bearing at all, creates any sense of urgency at all on either side? Because remember now, television, in a large part, drives this game. And what the fans are telling you is, okay, you're going to do that? We're not interested. I think long-term the fans will always come back because it's just too popular.
Yeah,
short-term.
I don't know that it creates urgency, but you would hope that it sort of creates a subtle reminder, like a poke in the ribs, and says, you know, this is not guaranteed. You know, and I always go back to in 1995 when the Jaguars were first starting. My sports editor came to me and was talking to me about covering the Jaguars, and I was covering the University of Florida, which is a big beat in this town. And it was not a foregone conclusion necessarily that the NFL was a bigger beat than Florida. It was, but it wasn't like it is now, where it's just the monster of sports. I mean, it's grown to what it is now, but remember, at the time, Jordan was big. The NBA was big.
Yes.
It was not as big as the NFL, but it was not what it is now. It wasn't where it was eight times bigger than anything. And it looks now like it could never be knocked off. But when you're running a league like this, you have to be careful that you don't completely upset the apple cart, to use a terrible cliche. I mean,
well, they're customers.
Have to be careful. Yeah, I mean,
you think of it as fans, which right. makes you think, well, they'll always come back because they're fans, right. but they're customers too.
The ratings are as unbelievable as they've ever been. A lot of it's because of the economy. People are watching TV rather than going out more than they were. But you would hope that the stewards of the game realize that this is not guaranteed. This is an incredible thing they have going, but it is not guaranteed.
Before we take a break, we've got Morgan who's calling from the Intercoastal area with a thought on labor. So, Morgan, go ahead with your question.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
I'm a huge Jaguar fan. We've been season ticket holders for 12 years now, I think.
God bless you.
Right around 12 years. But anyways, I've only casually been paying attention because I always assumed this strike would come to an end, this lockout would come to an end. Now, correct me if I'm right, or if I'm wrong anyway, I probably am, but aren't the owners locking out the players because the players are demanding a larger share of the profits? Is that right or wrong?
No, that's incorrect. A deal was cut in 2006 that shifted the business model. They went from a defined pool of revenue to a much larger TFR, total football revenue model, and that pinched the Jaguars. It mm-hmm. pinched a number of small market teams because remember now, in the DGR, designated gross revenue, and I feel like I'm losing people as I say this, but it was tickets, it was parking, it was concessions, it was licensing, and it was television money. And the players got 60% of that, okay? But what the owners kept was the club revenue, the naming rights, the local TV and radio money. That was all kept to the owners, and so it worked. Well, in the TFR now, all that money goes in and the players get 60 cents of it, okay? That's as simple as I can make it. In that model, it makes it very difficult for smaller markets, and as we found, even some of the larger markets have struggled with 60 cents gone before they even pay any of their bills. So it's not the players demanding more, it's the owners saying, we've got to have more off the top to cover our expenses. So it's the owners who are making the statement.
Okay, in that case, I probably didn't express it right, but you told me what I thought anyway. And now, in that case, I'm on the side of the owners 100%, and I'm going to tell you why. Because when things go bad, it's their money at stake. The players get paid anyway, unless they get hurt. And then, of course, there's arrangements for that. There's insurance. There's all kinds of stuff. But when things go bad, when markets go bad, when fans don't show up, the owners take the hit. The players' contract is already signed, and they get paid for showing up. For you know, they even get incentive bonuses. The owner's money is at risk. Therefore, I'm not really about them sharing their profits with the players. The players make good money for what they do.
Well, I mean, to a degree, here's my own philosophy, and it's just mine, is that they do put a lot of the risk on the table, right? I mean, it's the people who make the most money in our society are the people that take the greatest risks. If you just go where it's safe and, you know, then you don't make as much money. If you take a risk, you make more. Now, the players, they have equity in this, too. It's their bodies. Mm-hmm. And you go talk to Jeff Lagerman or Tony Boselli or any of these guys who have played the game over a long period of time, John, and there is a price that comes with that. But the overall, here's what the owners really are saying. They take $1 billion off the top of the 9.4, and then they divide it 60-40. But there are stadiums that need to be built in California, and they're not going to get public dollars for that. It's got to be done privately. There is 3D television that they want to bring into the league, and that's going to be a big expense. They're saying, look, in order for us to be able to grow the league, we need $2 billion off the top, and then we'll go 60-40 on the 7.4 that remains. And what the players are saying back is, well, you got to show us. You got to open the books.
Right.
So it's a very complicated argument. Does it make sense of it, though, John?
And that's about as clear as you can define it. I mean, a big example of this is the NFL Network, which I don't think anybody would, you know, I would argue is a good thing.
Good product.
It's been good for the league. It's gotten better over the years. My understanding is it is still not anything close to a moneymaker.
No.
And but yet it has been a great tool for the league, and people would be confused and upset if it went away. That's the sort of thing that the owners are talking about. Of this is money that's growing the league. This is money we need to do things you're talking about. But that's a very conceptual thing, that once you're at the bargaining table, the players don't want to give it back because that's a long-term growth that they're not going to see anything from. And that's when that kind of thing that I just said gets muddled, is when the negotiations get muddled and the concepts get muddled. And, you know, both sides have points, and that's why it's a long process.
You know, and to finish this thought out, Morgan, in 2006, the owners couldn't agree on revenue sharing. And the players sensed that as they were looking at an extension of the labor agreement, and they said, oh, here's what we want. And the owners amongst themselves were so worried about losing football in 07, 08, 09, and 10 that they took a deal that Wayne Weaver and Ralph Wilson and Mike Brown all rallied against and said, it's a bad deal. We don't need to take it. Well, in the ensuing years, the other owners have agreed that that's a bad deal. See, what you're looking for here is both sides to leave feeling like they've been treated fairly. Because if you do, you ensue long-term labor peace. It's what the league has had for 25 years. They need a deal in which the owners win and the players win, not one side or the other. It's that other side where just the players felt like they won last time that has us where we are now. And with that, we are way over, and radios have probably clicked off. We should be talking about the quarterback, which is what we'll do when we return with John Osher on Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. All right, welcome back. We went long in that first segment, which means we've got news break coming up here in about 4 minutes. We're going to spend most of the second, in fact, all of the second half on the show on the draft, and a lot of that's going to be on the quarterback, obviously. He drives the whole thing. You have some very strong thoughts on the Jaguars' move up to grab Blaine Gabbert, and to boil it down for people is they had to do it.
Well, you know, you didn't have to do it necessarily this year with this guy, but, you know, like we talked about off the air a little bit, I believe that Gene Smith doesn't make moves based on, I forget, what the word we were using, but he doesn't talk himself into things.
Okay.
He's not going to sit there and say, I'd really like a quarterback. There's five there this year. Boy, I hope that this guy, Gabbert, is a good guy. I don't know if he's that good, but I really want a quarterback, and I got to sell it to the fans. I believe Gene looks at it and, as much as he can, takes the player's name out of the equation, takes what he wants to happen out of the equation, and looks at it and says, do I believe, based on my 25 years experience in this business, that this is a guy? Meaning, and we all know what a guy is at quarterback, that this is a special guy who I can build it around. The league's built on this position. Is he one of these guys that drives the league? And if Gene believes that, which I believe he does, or he wouldn't have made the trade, then when he dropped to 10 and he could get him for a second-round pick, then it's a have to. Gene couldn't look himself in the mirror if he really believed this was a guy and say, I didn't go after him. And again, I've only known Gene a couple of months. You've known him a long time. But everything that I've been told about him, that I've gotten from talking to him, leads me to believe that that's how he makes decisions and that's how he thinks about football. If all that's true, then if you trust this guy knows what he's doing, and I do from dealing with him, then this was a pick that he felt like he had to make.
You're right on with that. And Gene has done something that I think makes a lot of sense. And I'm biased because Terry McDonough is a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. But Terry's a completely different personality than Gene.
Oh, sure.
And there is nothing in Terry McDonough that is a yes man. Okay?
Right.
Terry's going to tell you what he thinks. And so you've got Gene, who does things his way, and then you've got Terry there, and he listens to Terry's opinion. And so as Terry was talking about people that he needed to go and see, and they were recounting these stories last night with Evening with the Scouts, they were talking about this quarterback and that quarterback. And I like the way that Gene operates, because he does operate, just like you said. And he surrounded himself with Tim Mingy and with Terry McDonough and Lou Clark and people who are not yes men, which I think helps him hone his decision-making ability even better. I think if there's anything I want to say about Gene in the last minute here before we take the break, that is he really is an important asset for this franchise for the long term because of his philosophy. And you were talking about that before the show began because Bill Polian has built a long-term winner up there with a very similar philosophy, maybe the same philosophy.
Right. And we can probably talk about it after we get back, but a lot of it is based on, and I think Gene's is the same way from everything I've talked with him at a couple of times, you do not draft based on gut instinct. You don't draft based on, I like a guy. You do as much as you can to take the uncertainty out of it and the subjectivity, and you build based on, do you think the guy can play? Do you think he can help you? And it's hard to do that sometimes. You saw it this weekend. People reacted, you only got five guys. You only did this. You only did this. You have to have an incredible belief in what you're about and a system in place that allows you to operate within that. And it's not easy because the draft can be emotional. But it seems like he really takes that out of the equation and he drafts on his philosophy, and it's a long-term philosophy. And I believe it's the only way to build. I think they're on the right track.
All right, we take a break for news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll send it to the news professionals over in the newsroom at WOKV and return with another half hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. All right, folks, here we go. Brian Sexton along with the senior writer from Jaguars.com, John Osher. By the way, it was fun. I love the story about you flying on Wayne's plane up to New York to get on the plane with the Gabberts.
It was fun. It was, and I'd done that twice. When I was with the Colts, I flew with Joseph Addai back from Houston. I flew with Anthony Gonzalez back from, he was in Columbus, somewhere in Ohio he was from. And it's just always interesting because, you know, I told the story before on the air about when I interviewed Kevin Hardy the day after he got here, and he's standing there looking at the river, and, you know, the sun's flashing in his eyes. And here's this big kid who is a superstar in many ways. He's had the biggest day of his life. And Blaine was the same way. They know their importance. They know this is a big moment, but they're still kids. and there's still sort of an overwhelmed feeling. You know, you see them at a very vulnerable moment, and it's just kind of neat to see them at that moment because you know they'll never be the same again.
Right.
In a lot of, you know, what's going to happen to them will change them, and they'll soon become aware of their responsibility, and they get into the routine, and it's all good. It's all part of life, but it's kind of neat to see them with their family when they're in town, and there's still a very childlike moment there for them where it's, wow, I really, this is really me. This is happening. They're very wide-eyed, and it's neat. And you know, what I saw in Blaine that day is a kid who, he was going through that, but he seems to be a guy who, as he learns, is going to have that capacity to handle it. And, you know, who knows if he will or not, but he does seem to have those traits that you want. There's a confidence about him, and there's a, you know, there's an eagerness to it. And he seems to have those traits that could make him the guy.
You know, I don't know whether anyone who's listening cares about this. I know the Jaguars organization does, and I do too, having been around it. How about the family structure there?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about a young man that's going to be very wealthy.
Sure.
In a very short period of time. I mean, we're talking maybe, under the current rules, maybe $20 million for a quarterback at number, you know, because that's what Eugene Monroe got, 19.
Yeah, he'll do okay.
Yeah, he'll do fine. yeah, all those things, the on
right.
the field, off the field, you were around his mom and dad, too.
Yeah, and, you know, I would hesitate to sit there and say, oh, boy, great family, because
you don't know
I met him for 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
And, you know, we all know, we all have weirdness in our family.
Oh,
so,
yeah, yeah.
You know, you never
that's
know.
That's family.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. But certainly the building blocks there. Both parents were on the plane. His little brother was throwing the football. I mean, it was a very Midwestern, cliched family in that sense. Not as a negative, but it just was.
Say, hey,
it
I'm
was.
From the Midwest. Come
right.
on.
You know, and I spent 10 years there. So,
yeah.
I mean, his brother's a quarterback at Missouri. His little brother is 10 years old, but he's clearly on a path to be a quarterback. This is a football quarterback family. As much as they can, I'm sure they've prepared him for this. They probably had discussions in the living room. Does any of that matter? Have guys like that crashed and burned?
Sure.
But it on the surface, they certainly seem to be a solid bunch. They certainly seem to care about Blaine. They certainly seem to have raised him the right way. You know, when a kid gets $20 million at age 22, you never know what that's going to do to him, and that's always – that's why this league spends so much time on character now and so much time poking and prodding and picking everything apart is you try to, as Gene said, his everything in this is a calculated risk. His job is to reduce the risk. That's the best way to describe a GM in this league right now is that's his job, to reduce the risk on these guys. But everything that you saw from Blaine shows you the right things. And now, you know, I'm sure Gene would tell you the same thing. Everything we saw shows us he's the right guy. Now it's up to him to do it, and it's up to the team to show him how to do it.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Let's grab our second call of the evening. It's Lee. He's over across the river in San Marco. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to just make two comments, and then I'll listen. First of all, I've been a season ticket holder since day one, and this is probably the most excited I've been since the last century. The rules of the league have changed to the point where you've got to have the guy to win in this league, and all you have to do is look at the Super Bowl participants of the last 10 years, and with the exception of the Bucs and the Ravens, the teams have had the guy. You've got to have him. And hopefully, if Blaine Gabbert is the guy, second-round draft pick was a small price to pay to move up and get him. The second thing I wanted to say is regarding the labor situation. When I was a kid, most of these teams were owned by families, and their primary source of income was the team. And one thing that I think the players need to remember is that Dan Snyder and Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft and guys like that, if you take away football, they're just rich guys you've never heard of. If you take away football, the players really have nothing. And the owners are going to be wealthy with or without football. And I think that's really the bottom line for the players. And I want to see football this fall, but I do understand the owner's point of view. I understand the way that the players feel too, but I really understand the owner's point of view. And thanks, and I'll take it off the air.
I'm not sure there's anything to say following that. I think maybe he was just expressing his opinion.
Sure.
I'll go ahead and say mine one more time, and that really is, I believe this, both sides have to leave that negotiating table feeling like they're partners, like they have been treated fairly, because otherwise we'll just be back here in a couple of years with the other side.
And I think one thing to remember about the owners, too, and, you know, I work for a team, so obviously I see the ownership perspective maybe more than I do the players. But he sort of made the point, the owners are wealthy. There's no question.
That's the only way you can play in this game.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are not worried about their mortgage payment at night. But that being said, they do know that they have to run a business, and it has to have a business model that works. They're not necessarily trying. I mean, these guys are all set up for life. That's not their concern. They're trying to find a business model that works. They're not. If they lose this battle, they're not going to not be able to make their house payment next month. I just keep saying it over and over again. They really are trying to find a business model that works. That is going to get played out as greed, and perhaps on some level, depending on your definition of greed, it is. But I know enough about it to know that the bottom line for them is they don't think this business model works, and they don't think it's going to work for the long term, and they have to find one that does.
And in whatever business they were in before they got in football,
right,
they proved success. I mean, they're wealthy for that reason.
Yeah, most of these guys, especially Wayne and Jerry, I mean, now the guys who have bought teams and the guys who have acquired these teams in their lifetime, Dan Snyder falls into that, a lot of these guys, they have had to reach this by knowing what they're doing, and they bring that with them. And, you know, Wayne made himself, so he knows what works and what doesn't. Right. And there's no question talking to him that he knows that this current deal does not work.
And so the long-term future of professional football in Jacksonville to some degree hinges on the ability to get a good deal.
It will certainly be shaped by it.
Yeah, exactly. We appreciate the phone call, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. I do want to point out, we're going to try to present, of course, I don't even need to point this out, but while we may tilt one way or the other because we see it more often, fair deal. It's got to be a fair deal. Both sides have to win.
Another question, and anybody who read, you know, when I was working for the Times Union, I'm a player's guy in that sense. They should get, they put their bodies on the line.
Exactly.
Get what you want. I mean, get whatever you can within the framework of individuals. But as a group, the players are going to need to realize that it has to meet somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. They've got to have some of the cost in terms of the growth of the business.
Right.
And that's really what the owners are asking for. 355-NFL1. Let's grab Doug on the west side as our next caller. Doug, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Oh, great show, guys, as always. Very
interesting,
even with the lockout. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah. We got lots to talk about tonight.
I know.
Try us in a month.
Sad, but, hey, I was going to ask you, you know, I could, you know, the Bengals had the number four pick, and they needed a quarterback because I don't think Carson Palmer is going to play for him. I think he's serious not playing for them again, and I don't think Mike Brown would trade him, which means he's retired for all intents and purposes. Do you think, you know, I don't understand why a team like that who needs a franchise quarterback and the best quarterback in the draft, the Jaguars, moved up to take. Why would teams pass, nine teams pass on this guy? Maybe a couple of them didn't need a quarterback, but some of them could have used one, you know, like him.
Well, I can speak to the Bengals. I can speak to the Bengals for you, Doug. And maybe you've heard this, John. Jay Gruden, who's their new offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. John's younger brother, fell in love with Andy Dalton, and they went and got him in the second round. I mean, they may have had a good grade, but they saw a chance to get a, by all accounts, unbelievably talented wide receiver mm-hmm. and the quarterback that they had fallen in love with, and that's what they went and did.
And that's what I believe the Chargers did that back in 2001 when they traded Vic. They got LaDainian, and they got Drew Brees. You know, and sometimes that works out. Also, different eyes see different things. Different teams want different things. The Titans went and got Jake Locker. And you know, I don't think there's anybody within the Jaguars who thinks that Locker is better than Gabbert. But clearly the Titans did. So different teams are built with different people with different philosophies who have different beliefs. And I do know the Jaguars believe this was the guy, and this is the way they're choosing to build. Does everybody in the league believe this is the guy? Clearly not, because there were teams that passed on him. But, you know, not everybody believed that Peyton was better than Ryan Leaf either.
True enough. We took a break. We need it. More to come. Jaguars this week from Everbank Field in Jacksonville, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along. Brian Sexton, pleased to be joined this evening by John Osher from Jaguars.com. Scott Kushner is sitting in. John Dineen's here as well. Let's go to Joe on the west side with our next call. Joe, welcome to the program. Good evening.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for calling. How are you?
All's good. I just had a couple of questions on the free agency side. Assuming that lockout gets resolved and we start pursuing free agent targets, we've still got some holes on defense, certainly, and also on the playmaking side on offense, one could argue on at receiver. Who are some of our targets for this year?
I'm sorry, in terms of free agency?
Yeah, who are some key free agent targets that you've heard of or heard whispers of that we're going to be interested in bringing in to kind of round out the talent?
I got to be honest, I haven't heard any.
That's the way they play it. I think conceptually, I think you're going to see him maybe go after one guy that fans really get excited about, meaning that guy, oh, yeah, I've heard of that guy. Maybe two. But I really don't think this franchise is looking necessarily to bring in three or four guys that people are going to think of as core guys. Because free agency, philosophically for this team, they want it to be a supplement as much as possible. And I'm not sure that they want to bring in 5 or 6 year contract veterans and have them get old, when the reality is, over time, they want to build this team to where their core guys are young guys. And you don't necessarily want to have aging veterans as these long-term guys you're counting on. And Brian may feel differently, but that's sort of how I see him playing this
thing out. No, I agree with you totally. Although, you know, last year they went and they got Aaron Kampman and gave him an $11 million signing bonus, and we went, whoa, because that differed from
right.
the stated philosophy.
And I think you might see, you know, and again, I've not talked to Gene about this, so this is purely speculation. You might see that with one spot this year, but I don't think you're going to see them load up and try to get, you know, 3-4 huge name free agents. They're going to be smart and get some second contract guys who fit that 26 to 27 profile. I go back all the way to 96 when they got Keenan and Eddie Robinson.
Yeah,
you know, Keenan was not a major name when he came in.
No,
he became one, but the big name was Leon. Remember, he signed first, and then it was Keenan McCardle. You might see that sort of thing where there's a big name, and then some guys that people say, "Well, who are they? I don't know much about them," but that they turn out to be long-term solid players for, and when I say long-term, for 3-4 years.
Appreciate the phone call, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. While we don't know, and of course, there's been no talk at all about free agency because we don't know when it begins.
Right.
And teams don't even know the rules under
Correct.
Which free
And that's the biggest thing. You don't know who's going to be available.
Because you don't know the rules.
Yeah, because you don't know who's going to be free, who's going to be still under contract with a former team. It's just too hard to know. And it might not be a mother load in free agency because of those rules. But the bottom line is this team does believe that there are young guys on this roster who were drafted in the last couple of years who are going to get better. One thing fans tend to forget, and that when I covered Tony Dungy, he would say every year, don't forget these first and second year guys that nobody really knows about because they've been playing special teams. They have the capacity to get better. They'll get a little better the more they're around. And I believe that's the way this team is drafted and built. They want some of these guys who were pretty good as rookies. Well, they can be pretty good as second-year players, and then they can be very, very good as third-year. And that's the ideal way to build it. You don't want to draft those guys and then sign free agents and not give them a chance to develop.
Right.
If you think a guy can get better first, second, third year, let them grow and let them develop. That's the way you're going to build a long-term roster.
You know, my sense is that when they go to free agency, obviously it'll be on the defensive side of the ball, but linebackers and safeties, I mean, you don't find cornerbacks and pass-rushing defensive ends in free agency.
Not
they
unless
don't,
you really overpay, and I just don't get the feeling that Gene Smith is going to want to go out and completely build the salary cap, because there will be a salary cap at some point.
Right.
You don't want to completely build your cap structure around guys you're not drafting.
You know, if Aaron Kampman had been healthy coming out of Green Bay, he might have gotten a bigger deal.
Sure.
And he didn't. He got $11 million. That sounds big. But he might have gotten a blockbuster deal.
Right.
But he didn't. The Jaguars saw a price that fit.
Right.
So I see linebacker and I see safety as where they're going to go. And they're going to go find guys you might not know that much about.
Right.
There might be one guy, as you mentioned, John, that the Jaguars will write an $11 million check to. Of course, man, he's going to have to be a leader like Kampman was. I mean, he's going to have to be a lot of things, but a young ascending player.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest are going to be guys that the Jaguars believe in. When they signed Kasim Osgood last year, nobody got excited. And
right.
yet, by the end of the year, people liked watching the coverage units on kickoff and punt because they knew Kasim Osgood could make a play.
If you can say one thing about Gene, you know, I haven't known him that long. He's going to stick to what he believes, and he's going to do what he thinks is best, and he's not going to try to make it. He's not concerned about how it's going to play in the media and the headline. And that's really what you want, and he's going to do the same thing in free agency. He knew people were going to question the draft. He only got five players. He knew coming in that that was going to be an issue, and he said up front, I understand the questions. I get that this is something people are going to ask about, but every player they get, they're trying to get a guy that they want to make sure that they come in and don't underachieve. That was a big thing he said. And it was very interesting when he said that. Well, of course you don't want a guy who's going to underachieve. But they really are making sure if they get five guys, they want all five of those guys to be on the field. And they don't want to just draft to make everybody happy on the Monday after the draft.
Right.
And same thing in free agency. They don't want to make people excited in May and then have them peter out in September. They've been down that road.
Yeah. Well, remember now, the sins of the past, meaning, you know, the 3-4,
right.
especially the 08 draft, have forced this team to take a very specific philosophy, and that is we need players all over the board. We're going to take the best ones available.
And
they might even
the
target a couple of guys and
sure.
move up. Like Rackley, they targeted him.
Right.
When they saw him there, they liked him going in. They had their eye on him, knowing the value. Remember, you don't know what they know.
Right.
None of us know going in exactly how much information they know. They targeted him, and he was there, and it made sense. So they gave up a six to go get a guy that they wanted.
And if this guy plays 5, 6 years, 7 years, and is as good as they think, your odds of a sixth round pick contributing in that way are pretty slim.
All right, I appreciate your time tonight.
No problem.
Loggy's going to bring us some wild turkey next week.
He's the guy.
The kind you eat. At least you never know.
He'll bring both.
You never know. Really appreciate it. Thanks for sitting in, John. And Scott, thanks for filling in for Joe. Y'all have a great night. We'll talk to you next Wednesday with Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.